Welcome to the Afropolitan Podcast, hosted by Eche Emole, founder of Afropolitan. On the show, we chat with Afropolitans whose footprints form the foundation of systems dedicated to building the future of a bold and progressive Black community. In each episode, our guests share their working formulas, the hard facts about leaving familiar terrain, embracing the unknown, and staying relevant afterwards. Listen as we extract the blueprints of fearlessness, innovation, and progress.
How you doing, bro?
I'm great. How you guys doing?
Welcome to the Bay, man. I'm just excited, bro. Like, this is our first event this coming... This is our first event since COVID.
Wow.
So it's like, it needs to be a vibe. We're not taking anything for chance.
Amazing. Like,
we're excited, bro. We're excited. Yeah. How you feeling?
Man, I'm good. Just got me even more excited. We're back outside slowly.
Yeah, because California was the last place to go back outside. Mm. So we've just had to, like... take our time, plan the almost a perfect event. And I just kept on saying, like, yo, I want you on here with us for this event, because also because we have sponsors, but you also fit their branding. And also, bro, you know, I'm a big fan. So I always like, yo, I need to do world. Let's bring world out here. And then, let's hopefully when things open up a bit more, we can get the tour going, you know?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm looking forward to that. Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. I'm so honored.
It's all good, man. Thanks, man. And honestly, I'm excited to have you. You're the last guest for this season of the Afropolitan Podcast. You are also our first guest on Clubhouse. I don't know if you remember that.
Oh, wow. So last year, this is my second time.
This is your second time, but this time it's on the podcast versus Clubhouse. Yeah, so we've come for us since then.
Yeah, this is my second time. This is my second time on Clubhouse. Actually, it's crazy.
Wait, since that time that you
came on? Time, yeah.
Oh my days!
I'm so not here. Sorry, but I'm glad to be back.
No, appreciate you, bro. Appreciate you. So let's get started real quick. We're gonna try to get as much information as possible in a short time because we know everybody has to go get ready for this amazing party coming up. But let's talk about how was it growing up in Lagos, bro?
Whew. You know what? Oh my God. I wasn't ready for that one. I was actually born in Mushin, Lagos, right?
Wow.
And yeah. And man, being a kid, I remember like with, you know, I was not, so it's, damn, man, you just got me all the way back.
All the feelings.
Let me breathe for a second. So I was born in Mushin, Lagos. My mom's a trader. My dad is a businessman, just entrepreneur, just really trying to make his ways. And I remember, like, you know how you go to Lagos and you're driving on the, you go from the airport to the island and you see people crossing the roads and stuff?
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. My mom used to have me on her back crossing the freaking road, bro.
Are you serious?
People, yeah, this is a whole different conversation. This is a whole different layer. Like, this year, I'm really bringing people even more closer to who I am, my story and stuff. Even with the new album I'm working on and stuff. So, you know, that's part of those memories, you know, I'm African first, always and forever, right? Regardless of, really, That's what made me who I am today, just growing up in Lagos, just having that culture, the musical aspect of it, just being introduced to African music first, Fuji music first, Afrobeats was a genre that I fell in love with as I grew up, but it was mostly Fuji because my parents are Yoruba, Fuji, Apala, and those, you know, Shina Pitas, King Sunny Ade, that was more my background, you know. Afrobeat for me, with the Fela Kuti was as I grew up, because, you know, that was something I found myself. And everything else has just really been a journey, traveling to Atlanta for college, learning how to create music in Atlanta. That's why I really started my music career. And, spending a lot of time in Africa, now fusing the vibes based on my experiences. Bro, like, it's been a journey.
So let me ask you this, right? For some reason, because you grew up in Nigeria, then you came to the US for school, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And then, but there's this, so you'd be considered somebody who's in the Nigerian diaspora, right? But you go back and forth so much that people don't even really know, where does world stay? Where's world located? Is world American? Is world in Nigeria? Where do you feel most comfortable and where do you call home?
You know what? To be honest, so right now I'm so nomad. I think home for me right now, my base, where you see me the most is I'm between Lagos, Los Angeles, Atlanta, and Houston now. So I'm like literally circling those places. I'm in a very, I put myself in a very uncomfortable space. I say uncomfortable because I'm on the mission, you know, to share my work, share my art, touch as many people as possible. So I'm really, really where I need to be, where work takes me currently, if that makes any sense.
Definitely does. So then going through your history, right? You get into a recording studio with Mario. What was that feeling like? First of all, meeting Mario. I don't know if you remember, like during that whole time, "Let Me Love You" was banging on Channel O back in the day.
I'm sure that was a big jam. That was
a huge jam. Still is, really. But what was that feeling like? First of all, meeting Mario, and then can you walk us through the 10,000 plus hours you put into perfecting your craft?
Okay. Whew. All right. Cool. So I started. Yeah. I started in Atlanta. I was an artist first. I remember, you know, I went to Georgia State in Atlanta. That's where I did my college, studied computer science.
Shout out to Georgia State.
Got my master's degree as well in information technology. So, I would go to school in the morning and spend all my time trying to get into studios. So being an artist, being an African boy in Atlanta was not the thing that being an artist, right? In that space. Right. Everything was very R&B. That's really my background. Besides where I'm from. So it's like the way for me at the time, nobody cared about an African boy being an artist in Atlanta. And that was where I lived. And, I fell in love with the art of songwriting. And I realized at the time that the only way to get into rooms was being a songwriter. All these labels were signing new artists. They were like really, you know, producers were looking for songwriters with different people, right? There was too many artists. People just needed songwriters to facilitate the projects. And I started really just trying to get into rooms. I remember like just going to different studios, major studios, and I can't even get into studios, right? All I could do is just hang around in the lobby and hope that some producers give me a chance. Shout out to my man, Kenneth Smooth, amazing producer, legendary. He did a lot of like the big hits in the 90s, Touch Me, Tease Me by Case and all the records. Yeah. He saw me and hanging around the studio in Atlanta. He was like, "Yo, what do you do?" And I was like, "Yo, I'm a songwriter." I played him a few records that I have. Then it wasn't the greatest records, but he saw potential in me, got me into the rooms. I started working with him. Then I started meeting different people, meeting different rappers, artists that he was working with. From there, it became a chain reaction. I find myself in country music sessions, in rap music sessions, doing hooks for ATL rappers. And I started working with this rapper named BK Brasco. He was signed to at the time. He introduced me to Mario because Mario was his boy. Got into the session. Me and Mario was special because like I've always been a fan. One of the most amazing vocalists. We did like tons and tons of records. He was working on the album at the time. One of the records, they leaked one of the records because something happened with that album that he never released it. One of the records got leaked that we did was a song called LSD, Love, Sex, Drugs. You can find it on YouTube. It was a leak. Yeah. Met B.O.B. in Atlanta. He, actually, that was interesting because I had a producer named Mike Best that I was working with at the time. I'm going to try to make this short. One of my very longtime friend, Mike Best, amazing producer. He produced this song called So Good on my Love is Contagious project. I was doing a lot of hooks for him and he had a hook from me and he sent it to a artist named Scotty ATL in Atlanta.
Yeah.
He just sent the beat and just my hook. Scotty and B.O.B. thought it was a vocal sample. It was like some classic vocal sample. They didn't know.
Are you serious?
And they recorded the record and they called my producers trying to clear the vocals. Right. And there's this record called Fantasies. You can find it on YouTube and everything.
Yeah.
I don't have blue hair then. If you're curious, you can go check that out. Wow. But they called my producers like, yo, we need to declare this record. We love this record. And he was like, yo, it's not a vocal sample. It's a guy named World. Right. Yeah. And he asked to meet me. He wanted to sign me to the label at the time.
And you were going by World by then.
Yeah. I was already going by World by then. And it was interesting. I was doing house music at the time. Yeah. Like my first ever success was in house music. I was working with DJs, like electronic DJs around the world. This song called Follow You was like one of the biggest songs in Denmark, in Eastern Europe at the time. Poland. Yeah. This was in 2015.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Then we met and he was like, yo, what else you got going on? I started playing him the records that I had. And I think at the time he felt like, yo, he didn't probably have enough money to sign me when he met me. Mm-hmm. No, that was funny because the intentions were to sign me. But somehow, some way, he was like, yo, pull up to the studio. Right, I pulled up to the studio. Next thing you know, I'm like cranking out hooks and hooks and hooks for him and his no genre artist, London J, Scotty ATL. Before you know, we got like almost like 10, 15 records, right? That's why if you go online and you search, you see a lot of records with me and B.O.B. We've got, I have a song on Ether album, on this Ether album called, what's that record? Damn, oh my goodness. Damn, so many records. But, you know, it's been, and I met Trinidad James working with it's just chain reaction.
Atlanta is an amazing place to be in.
Yeah, that's all before Atlanta, show you off. This is all before show you off to be. Wow. Like, yeah, this is all before show you off, you know, and,
so then let's talk about show you off, right? Because you've worked with some talented, even not the best talented Nigerian producers. So Shizzy was on show you off, right? And then obviously Sars. So what was that connection when show you off comes out and you're realizing like, yo, this is going to be a music career. When did it click for you? Or did you always feel like music was going to be your life passion? Or were there any other plans? Like what did you want to be growing up basically?
Bro, I only wanted to do music. And even the funny thing was when I lived in Nigeria as a kid then, and I used to watch like all the R&B music, rap music and stuff. I thought about doing music, but I only wanted to do it at a big stage. I was like, Nigeria is not the place for me. I want to do it. Trust me.
You say you wanted to Japa?
Yeah, I did. I felt like I wanted to
do it. Yeah, man.
Ages because I was inspired by so many greats and I didn't look at myself any less even as a kid.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying? I never looked at myself less of what I could become. It was more like, you know what? I can be just as great as these amazing artists that I'm looking up to. Show You Off was my first step at connecting back. So if you notice, everything I mentioned was all about just America. R&B, hip hop, you know, working with country musicians, working with R&B musicians, with pop artists and different type of artists, right? That was my 10,000 hours because I spent years bouncing from studios to studios, working with different artists, different genres. And when people see me today, they don't understand where world comes from. That's where I come from.
Definitely.
You know, you can see that in the music that I do. And you can see that in the album that I have coming out this year. So for me, Show You Off was my first step at connecting back to my roots after I left.
Yeah.
Cause that was the first song that I would wake up to and I'd get like hundreds and hundreds of messages from back home, from Nigeria to Ghana. Everyone wanted to know who I was.
Yeah.
That was in 2016. But when a video came out and everyone saw the video, the art, the blue hair, that changed a lot of shit.
Yeah.
I feel like that was a turning point in African and Nigerian music, that song particularly, because it showed a different range in African artistry and you know, so that was a blessing. Shout out to Sheezy, shout out to Walshy Fire, because people didn't know like Walshy brought like Major Lazer and the marketing behind that record. That's why a lot of people on the islands and it just spread out really, really fast. And I'm so grateful to today, you know, that record changed everything. Then Sars came out along. I know he heard the record Show You Off and he told me that he was a fan of that record. And when we met in LA, the first record we did was Trouble.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
What year was this? What year was this for you and SARS?
Oh, so we met in 2017. So guess what? We did. So I Love Girls with Trouble has 7 records. We created 7 of those, 5 of those records in 2017. We
created while SARS was out in LA.
Yeah, so we worked between LA and Atlanta at the time. So we did Trouble in LA a day after I met him. We did Sade in LA. We did Ego in Atlanta. This is all 2017. We did Prisoner in Atlanta.
Because the album, the EP was dropped in 2019.
Yeah.
So these tracks were done since 2017.
So guess what? So,
that's wild.
Bro, I was working on Love is Contagious. That project, and I Love Girls with Trouble at the same time.
Yeah.
Right. And both projects came out in 2019. Right.
Wow.
And Blow My Mind, this is the record that I wrote for Chris Brown and David Doe, came out in 2019 as well. We did Sweet in the Middle, that was 2019 as well. It was a crazy, crazy year, to be honest. And pandemic hit 2020.
I wanted to talk about that, right? So 2019, there's a huge momentum.
Yeah.
Like I was pissed that I missed the show you had by one day because I flew into Nigeria, right? And the show, I believe, was on a Sunday. So I was really pissed about
the
Hard Rock one. The Hard Rock one in Lagos.
Yeah.
Right. So I'm over there like, okay, bet 2020, it's okay. We're all just going on tour. And then the pandemic hits. What was the thought process for you during the pandemic? And were there any things you learned about yourself through that process, through the whole pandemic lockdown too?
Oh, man. I was excited. I was ready to go on tour. Like, just like so many other artists, I'm sure. We're all in the same space, to be honest, trying to do so much and not being able to do a lot. But the only thing we had was ourselves, our family. Yeah. That was special. I don't take it for granted. For the first time in almost 20 years, I get to spend the whole year with my mother, my siblings. Mm-hmm. I don't take that for granted. I was in Lagos, Nigeria for a whole year for the first time in 20 years. I was in one room for the most part. creating music, I had a chance to reflect, reset. Because we couldn't go on a tour, I had to turn around the next song, the next project to keep the things flowing. That's why I released Afro Soul last year during the pandemic. Not worried so much about the idea of touring. It was just about putting new music out there to keep the energy flow and share it. You know, because people, we all needed something, and I wanted to get that out regardless of all the promotional things we couldn't do. Just keep everything afloat, and I'm glad I did. Shout out to everyone that embraced that project as well. But it was a blessing, to be honest, for me.
Definitely. So we were talking to Joe Boy maybe late last year, and we tried to ask every artist this question. There are crazy show stories, right? Where whether it's the first show you ever did or the first like interactions with promoters. Do you have a crazy promoter story? Joe Boy was saying that one of the first shows he did, the crowd said booing him and said throwing stuff on the stage. And they're like, he was saying that these are the weird things you go through. And he said that experience when he went home and he was feeling down, he still came back and said, hey, I want to still be an artist, right? Because those are things like you can say to yourself, like, I never want to hit the stage again. That was a horrible experience. Do you have any crazy promoter show type stories?
You know what? For me, I'll go all the way back because that's more exciting.
Yeah.
So being an African boy in Atlanta, going to college, still got the heavy accent. Music. I went to a talent show in Atlanta.
Yeah.
And I really thought I had it together. This is early stages, and I remember going on stage for the first time. You know, say from my back, so really, this is transition from like thinking I had the best vocals in the world, right? In my bathroom and everything, going on the stage. They allowed me to go on stage. And I remember the record that I did then. It was like a Donnell Jones record, Where I Want to Be.
Yeah.
Right. and that was the worst and the best day of my life because I was booed. And I wasn't allowed to finish the song.
This is in Atlanta.
this was in Atlanta. The person who was hosting literally came on stage and collected the mic from me.
What?
Yeah. And it was like, don't torture these people any longer. You've done enough.
Wow. Like,
guy, I was so broken.
Bruh.
I was so broken, right? I remember going home. This is one of the worst and best days ever, because the week after, it was a weekly talent. And I went back, though. Mm-hmm. I went back the week after. Week after, he was like, this guy again.
You back.
Back the third time. The second time, it was booed again, right? They didn't let me finish again. The third time. They let me finish this time, but it was really not any really love. It was just like, okay, all right, cool. Get off stage, right?
Yeah.
I'm not sure when
mm-hmm.
I got the first type of love, but maybe it was like the sixth time. I'm very stubborn, right?
Mm-hmm.
To be honest. But I'm glad they actually allowed me to come back, because I was doing different songs, different times. And I remember this. I'll never forget this. There was one time I got off stage. They actually let me finish. And, I went to the bar, I was just by myself, and this lady walked up to me and she said, you did so good today. I've seen you the past few weeks. She doesn't know how she changed my life and that what that did to me. And you know, I'm so grateful, because sometimes we all need a little motivation.
Mm-hmm.
We got to start. I tweeted something the other day. I said, you got to start somewhere and continue to do what feels right and follow the path that feels right. You just got to start somewhere, you know. Yeah, that's my little story.
So then, yo, that's an amazing story, by the way, because it shows its tenacity and also the perseverance, right? Because sometimes you're like, man, maybe my parents were right, saying, let me go be a lawyer or a doctor or something. Say, you ask yourself, you know, come to this moment, right? Like, hey, do I really want to do this? Because if I do want to do this, this is what's going to come with. So then, can we talk about the role that patience plays as an artist waiting for your first big break, like your first recognition? Because for a lot of people, I'd heard Show You Off and I'd met you in Afrochella through AZ. I don't know if you remember Universal.
Of course.
So that was where we first met. But then for me, where I for sure became a super fan was I Love Girls with Trouble. Right? Because I told you guys that track was the soundtrack for my December. I did a lot of things I'm not necessarily proud of, but we'll talk about that. But it just felt like the chemistry between you and Sarge. And honestly, I'm still blown away from the fact that those records were recorded in 2017, because they felt fresh. Like when I was listening to the records, right, I imagined that you and Sarge had gone to like this vacation place. You guys are chilling, living a soft life, and you guys are just recording every day, right? Yeah. So to hear that those records were already done 2 years prior is crazy to me. And that was the first time you ever met Sarge. Yeah. Is there a favorite record you have off that EP?
You know what? It depends on the day.
Because
all those records are so special.
Yeah.
When we met, we had one thing in common, right? We wanted to create a very progressive Afrobeat project that competes with anything in the world. I don't care who you are.
Any track.
Anywhere. Like, I don't care who you are. I don't care if you're the number one artist. I don't care. You know, I'm a big fan of Kanye. I want, like, it was like, you know, Jay-Z, Beyonce. I don't care who you are. I want you to hear that record randomly. You're like, what the fuck is this? Do you understand what I'm saying? That was the energy. Do you get me? Like, there was no coincidence. It was not, like, there was no, by chance. It was all very intentional. Do you know what I'm saying, right? I met Sarge, and it's so crazy. When I met Sarge, I wasn't familiar with his work as much. The only song I knew from Sarge was Come Closer. That's to tell you how I was such a diaspora guy. I really didn't start really spending much time in Nigeria till like I said, like end of 2018. Yeah,
So you're meeting Sarge in LA, so you're not even recognizing that like this guy is a hit maker in Nigeria back to back.
The only song that I knew of Sarge when we met, I'm not sure even if he knows this, the only song that I knew of him was Come Closer. That was the record with Wiz. And
Wiz and Drake.
Drake, yeah, because You know, I was so much more here at that time. And even when I met him, the only Afrobeat record that I had was Show You Off.
Wow.
Yeah. And I remember playing him a whole catalog of the music that I had. It was strictly just soul, alternative music, to be honest, at the time. And everything was all intentional. He had a great spirit. And to me, I thought, like, what happens when you take... he was playing me just tracks.
Yeah.
And he played me Trouble, right? Mm-hmm. Trouble was a beat that he made. He told me he made that track because he was coming to see me. And he just made it, it was like a rough track.
Yeah. Right?
It was simple, very open. And he played me a whole bunch of stuff. And I loved that track immediately. And when I recorded it, the next day when it came around to the studio, I was like, yo, this just sound finished. I don't think much. And that's why if you listen to Trouble today, till today, it's a very simple track.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it was in its very raw form, and we left it because it felt good the way it was. And we spoke, it was like, yo, let's do a project together. And here we are, you know. Yeah.
Blessings. So I wanted to transition to the music business itself, right?
Yeah.
What are the parts that you've had to learn and you're like, man, I really don't like having to even think about this, right? Like, has the music business shown you things that you'd heard other people complain about? And what are the places where you're like, I wish this could be better? Like, business could be better in this way?
Man, so many things. There is the new artist, mm-hmm. new songwriter aspect of business. There's no, this is a lot deeper. I'm going to try to cover it as much as I can, in fact. There's a new artist, a new songwriter, a new producer aspect of business where when you go into a business space where you're working with a bigger artist, mm-hmm. then the business changes based on where you are at a certain moment in your career.
Mm.
I think that covers a lot.
Yeah.
Actually.
Okay. Yeah.
What you deserve and what you get,
yeah,
is based on where you are at a certain in your career. I think that's probably made my work so much easier trying to explain this. And for me, understanding that and adjusting to that with mm-hmm. different and communicating that idea with people, I'm going to fast forward to the space that we are, which is very important. We are as of 2016, 2017. From my experience, right? A lot of African producers did not know about publishing.
Wow.
I'm talking about, I think there's a lot of facts to this. A lot of African producers, I'm talking about the big, big African producers, did not know, I'll say 95, 97, 98.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
About the music publishing business.
Jeez.
Right?
Yeah.
So we are living in the world today. So literally, I'll say it's different now today because people are more educated. The African music is being more exported. There's a lot more international business being done, and people are learning every day.
Wait, right? do you mind explaining what you mean by the music publishing business? Just for people who are not familiar, like do you mind explaining that?
Yeah, it's like from just really working with African producers at the time, from Sheezy mm-hmm. to SARS and different people and just really different producers upcoming as well. It was a learning process. And, you know, me being on this side of the world to where publishing, like, was a key thing, being a songwriter. So I learned so much. And I will have to, you know, I was talking to Sheezy a lot back then, too. And he would come and ask me a lot of questions. And I would have, like, wow, why don't you know this now? You know, but it was great for me to be able to share tell him things that I know that, you know, when he comes to me and asks me questions and realizing that he's done so much at the time. And I think it was just the fact that the music industry in Nigeria needed to expand beyond Africa. And it wasn't a bad thing. It was just the state of African music at the time because most things were based on pay me now. And it was only a few people that actually understood that they were actually owning those publishing things. And now you fast forward to where 2 years later, a lot of producers had to start fighting
old
managers to get their publishing right. You know what I'm saying to you?
Yeah.
Or artists that own the publishing stuff. So it really is an educational thing. And it was because in radio in Nigeria, you don't get royalties for your song mm-hmm. being played on radio till today. You know what I'm saying to you? It was more of a hype business. It was a thing where producers walk into a club, you get shout out, oh, you're the best. And people will enjoy that until you're not getting royalties and you realize, yo, where is this money going to? Somebody was collecting that. And people had to start fighting people, trying to get their stuff back after 2 years, but it was too late because it's already signed off. When you collected 100,000 naira, 50,000 naira, 200,000 naira, it's too late. But now, we're in an age where a lot of African producers are learning the business. Mm-hmm. Obviously, like African business right now in the international world is in a learning process because there's no business norm.
Yeah.
What I mean by that is that there's no business norm to what. So in America, it's like this has been going on for years. So when you go to someone and say, oh, I just did a song with you, I won 100% of it. They look at you crazy because, oh, this is not the business norm. Yeah. Like, this is how we do business. Yeah. But now in African international business, there's no business norm because people are still learning what the norm is. And it's still kind of early. So we just got to communicate with each other better. This is my experience. Yeah. We got to communicate with each other better at the beginning stage, even before you get into the studio, just so that it's not after the business is done that we start having this communication. That's my little take. Yeah.
Man, you have dropped a gem right here. And I think why I love what has happened in the last 2, 3, 4 years is the globalization of African music, right? I think it exposed us to so much more because I always have this conversation with a couple of my friends is when I'm in Nigeria, sometimes the scarcity mentality really affects me because I'm like, yo, the world is so much bigger, right? And if you open up your mind to see how big it was, you'll know that collecting that 100,000 check now, when if you would just wait a year or 2 years for it to be $100,000, right? Like it's literally like that's literally what it looks like. And I think, like you said, hopefully
it's the intellectual property.
It's the intellectual property part of it. And I think the more that they see the people who've waited reap those benefits, the more obviously, like you said, the norms are now changing over time. But let me ask you this: who's been your favorite artist to record with?
Favorite artist to record with is Asha. Mm-hmm. Asha.
Wow.
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah. So what was it? What was it about that session?
You know, she's such a pure spirit.
Yeah.
We made so much music during the pandemic. Because it was like I was in Lagos, she was in Lagos as well, and we met in just magic song after song. I think I would go to her house and record like we recorded for like a course of like I'll say 3 months during the pandemic. Before curfew, I'd go in the morning, take all my equipment, and I'd be there and just create music. In the process, we created a project together for the future. it's a special one. I can't wait for the world to hear.
When does that drop?
We're aligning right now. You guys are gonna wake up to just Ed and DSPs, and it's just gonna be right there. Just
like, what?
Yeah, you guys are gonna wake up to it. Yep.
Are we? Is there a potential Asha world tour?
You know what? No telling. To be honest, that seems right.
That seems right.
That sounds right.
Yeah, it sounds amazing.
Yeah.
No, but world, man, I want to thank you for coming on to the Afropolitan podcast, bro. Like,
thank you. This has
been an honor to host you. Can't wait to party up with you later on today.
Thank you for coming through. Thank you. I want to add one thing before I leave. So definitely. I'm actually releasing my first full-length album this year, sometime this year towards the end of the year. It's called My World With You. It's definition of my name, World With You in it. I'm so excited. I've been working endlessly on this. I can't wait to take you guys on this new journey.
Let me ask you this, right? Because you make a lot of music that we would say appeal to the ladies, right? But we never see you with any special ladies. So how is it possible that you're able to make music that feels so real and genuine, but you have not announced to the world a special? Is there a special lady?
You know what? You want me to bring you to my bedroom, Abby?
You just said that they were the albums by Ward with you, so we cannot come into your world.
It's an inspiration behind the scenes. Like, if you want me to, if you want me to just put a camera inside, now let me know. Now answer that question. I can put a camera inside for everybody to watch now. If you want a camera, you know, then I'll answer that question.
Drop an OnlyFans link, man, you know.
Okay, so. You know what? Maybe we might need to do that. Love, bro. Thank you so much.
Yeah, I appreciate you, bro. But see you later on today, man. Have a great one, bro.
Bless.
Thanks, love. Man.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening to the Afropolitan Podcast. We are building the future of a progressive Black community. To join our community, you can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Afropolitan. Be sure to join our Discord and Clubhouse community by clicking on the link tree on our Instagram page. See you on social.